This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Suicide is the second leading cause of death in adolescents between the ages of 15 and 19. The Netflix adaptation of the book 13 Reasons Why depicts the aftermath of a teen girl's suicide and the events that led to that fatal decision. Here's a clip of that show.
Hey, it's Hannah Baker. Settle in, because I'm about to tell you the story of my life. More specifically, why my life ended. And if you're listening to this tape, you're one of the reasons why.
The show is being called out for glamorizing suicide and is prompting a warning from the National Association of School Psychologists. But others say the popularity of this series could inspire conversations about suicide and prevent some young people from trying to end their lives. Here's what the producer, Selena Gomez, the singer, and the book's author, Jay Asher, had to say about that.
The whole issue of suicide is an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but it happens. And so we have to talk about it. And it's dangerous not to talk about it because there's always room for hope.
And we wanted to make something that can hopefully help people because suicide should never, ever be an option.
How can young people, parents, and educators start a dialogue and share the dialogue about suicide prevention? Can the stigma around mental illness be changed? Have you seen the series, 13 Reasons Why? Did you read the book? What did it say to you? Have you been touched by teen suicide? Give us a call. We want to hear your story. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Joining us this hour, Dr. Jeff Gentry. He is the Senior Vice President of Clinical Services for the Clarity Child Guidance Center. Terry Marbito, she is a coordinator for the Alamo Area Teen Suicide Prevention Coalition. Okita Gibson, the Senior Director of the Leadership Development at Northeast ISD, and Dr. Doreen Marshall, Vice President of Programs for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thanks, all of you, for joining us here. And let me start off by asking Okita, y'all sent out a letter at Northeast ISD warning parents about 13 Reasons Why. What was in the letter? What were we trying to achieve?
Yes, thank you. We have wonderful counselors on the ground at our campuses, and when we heard from our counselors that our students were watching 13 Reasons Why, and it was a topic of conversation and gaining a lot of popularity, and some of the counselors said their concerns were that maybe not all parents even knew that their students were watching it or even knew about the show. It certainly has, is aimed at a certain demographic. And so we want to be partners with parents always in public education, and we wanted to be proactive and just make sure that parents have some resources to be able to help talk about the issues that are addressed in the show.
So, Otita, you parents, how did you first hear of the show?
Honestly, even being a Netflix subscriber, I heard about it from a counselor at one of our campuses.
And then, so a parent says, I asked my child, they told me, Otita, that, yeah, they watched it. What should a parent's reaction should be? It shouldn't be automatically, oh, my God, my kid's going to kill themselves, but what?
Absolutely not. And in the letter that we sent some resources as well to help guide the parents, some talking points from save.org and the Jed Foundation, for parents to help guide them as they have a conversation with their teen, and hopefully it wouldn't be students younger than middle school watching the show. But we just wanted them to have those resources because they are tough topics, and they're topics that a lot of people aren't very comfortable talking about, and they don't really know what the best avenue is, what the best approach is to talking to something like that about that with their child. So we wanted to provide that, and also just to make sure that parents were aware that we have trained counselors at every school that can help support them if they have questions, or if they feel like their students have questions, or if, you know, if their kids just need to go talk to someone that can be a great resource for them. I know counselors weren't portrayed very positively in the series, but we certainly have wonderful counselors, and we're very proud of our counseling staff.
Right. The protagonist, Hannah, calls out the counselors in her tapes for not really paying attention to her calls for help. But Dr. Gentry, you have a 16-year-old son, and what was your experience discussing the show with him?
Well, I heard about the program or found out about it online just accidentally. And so I picked him up from school and just asked him about it. And I said, what do you know about this show? Have you heard of it? And he said, I've seen every episode of it. And so then we began a conversation about it. And he felt like it was a good thing in the sense of getting the issue out on the table. But he also expressed some concern that more vulnerable kids watching it, particularly in isolation, that it could cause some problems for them.
And have you seen any examples in your work of children who may have mentioned 13 Reasons Why in talking about their thoughts about suicide?
Well, after I had this conversation with my son, the next day when I went to work, I found some information like from the Jed Foundation and also some just sort of a synopsis of the program. And I sent it out to all our clinical staff, probably about 30. And the feedback I got was that, and we're a child and adolescent psychiatric hospital with outpatient services, inpatient services. The feedback I got from our clinical staff was that they were not hearing a lot about it. There was some reference to it, but it wasn't coming up in conversation. And one of our therapists commented about how our kids these days have this sort of world to themselves of all kinds of stuff through social media and other kinds of channels that we really don't even know about. We did coincidentally then have someone who, a student who was admitted to our psychiatric inpatient program just a couple of days after this for having made a reference in something written at school about wanting to be like Hannah Baker because she's dead. And so one of our therapists emailed me and said, you know, coincidentally, unfortunately, here is an example of some influence the show's had in not such a good way. It also points to the possibility there are other kids that are feeling that way that we don't know about.
So people should at least have an awareness of the show, the characters, like if you're you're so Clay, or you should, yes, know what they're referring to. You should understand the language. This is becoming part of the language that kids are using to talk about this issue.
Right. And your producer sent to me a program of kids watching and reacting to 13 Reasons, and I really recommend that because it's sort of a shortcut for adults to understanding a kid's take on a program.
We'll put that link on our website, tpr.org. It's kids reacting to watching 13 Reasons Why, and they give pretty good reviews, mixed reviews, about the reality of the series, what it means to them, and what we need to know as adults about teen suicide today. We're going to continue the conversation, speak to some of our other guests, open up the phone lines, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Hello, my name is Aurora Carrion. I'm a social worker in the San Antonio Independent School District. Every day I'm working with students and families that are dealing with mental health issues. Part of my job is to bridge the gap for my students and their families in finding appropriate resources to help them be successful, not only in school, but also in life. The reality is our students are in school the majority of the day, some of them struggling with many issues related to mental health. It is important for our schools to be active participants in assisting families and following up and connecting them with appropriate treatment. I know I'm doing my job right when my students and families feel comfortable reaching out to me.
My name is Rudy. I am a graduating senior in SAIZ. I was recently diagnosed with a severe mental illness. If it wasn't for the support from my social worker and school administration, I wouldn't be able to attain my dream of attending a university in the fall of 2017. Because of the school's understanding of mental illness, they were able to offer me and my family all the support we needed to seek treatment now and in my future. My treatment is still a work in progress, but I know that it is because of the school's help I was able to connect to the treatment that I need to be successful.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about teen suicide. These are two voicemails that we received from SAIST. We reached out to them to contribute to the program today as we talk about teen suicide prevention and the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why, which has become controversial in talking about this issue. Some say he's glamorizing teen suicide. Terry Marbrito, the coordinator for the Alamo Area Teen Suicide Prevention Coalition, what are the realities of teen suicide here in San Antonio?
We know that in the last couple of years, we've seen a rise in teen suicides in Bexar County. And I know Dr. Gentry has some more specific information about that as he serves on the Child Fatality Review Team that looks at each and every death of a child and youth in our community. So when we saw that rise due to that kind of participation, we formed a coalition to bring mental health providers together, school district folks, and other kinds of stakeholders and advocates in the community to look at what can we do. So we know that, you know, we don't talk about mental health, much less suicide. We don't talk about mental health. And parents aren't talking about mental health with their own kiddos. And so we knew that we needed to work much, much harder on the messaging and opening up conversations. So I have to kind of really back it up to, like, mental health in general. We don't, you know, there's a great TED Talks out there that talks about when you, if you have a chronic physical illness and you're in the hospital, you know, somebody comes to your door and leaves you a casserole, you know, and takes care of you and offers food and support and phone calls and a little card. But when we have a mental health crisis and folks are kind of absent from our lives for whatever reason, they're out of school, whatever, you know, we don't take a casserole. We don't even talk about it. So we don't talk about mental health enough. And that's got to be, you know, where I have to really go back and focus. And the other important part is that our coalition very wisely understood that if we're going to talk about it and we want teens to have a better understanding and be able to talk with their parents and vice versa, that kids had to be involved. So this group did have a very important focus of bringing teens together to talk about mental health in general and certainly teen suicide prevention. And so we've been really successful in bringing kids together to talk about this issue. And I think we're making an impact because they're going back to their schools and saying, can we talk about mental health? Can we have a table? Can we celebrate Children's Mental Health Awareness Day? Those kinds of things.
Is that because teen suicide, you know, 9 times out of 10, there are mental health issues leading to that suicide. Frequently, that's going to be depression. Also, there's going to be frequently a substance abuse disorder there as well.
Could be.
And so Dr. Gentry, talk about the numbers that you have.
Well, the numbers that we have just show an increase in the number of suicides from 2012 to 2016, going from about 3 back in 12 to 13 last year. I'm only aware of 2 so far this year, but that's not an official number. For me, I think one of the things Terry is talking about is stigma, and one of the things that I hear as a pattern over the time that I've been in this business is people who finally come to us tend to say, I wish we had sought help much sooner. And so I think a lot about what keeps that from happening, and it is because the idea of going to see a professional seems like such a huge step and a complicated step that people second-guess themselves on.
And it's difficult to get hold of a professional these days here in San Antonio.
It is a challenge, but it's if it needs to be done, it needs to be done, and people should be persistent about it. But I also suggest that there's intermediate steps. There are things like the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which you can call if you're just in question and you think, you know, I don't know what to do about this or if I even should do something about this. You can talk to a professional for no fee who can kind of consult with you and advise you and say, you know, I think this is something you really need to follow up, or, you know, this sounds like it's not quite that serious. Here's what I would consider doing, blah, blah. So that you don't, it's sort of an intermediate step.
So, Otika Gibson at the Northeast ISD School District. Have you watched the series?
I have. I watched it just because I wanted to know what our kids were watching and what our counselors were maybe working with.
What did they get right or wrong in regards to the mental state of a youth who might be considering suicide?
Well, one of the things that, you know, obviously bothered me as an educator is that the educators seem to be pretty clueless in the series. But I also really was not, I was uncomfortable with that it really didn't address mental health issues at all. It addressed a lot of challenges that teenagers deal with. And we know that teenagers deal with it. It was a difficult time to be a teenager when I was a teenager back in the 80s, and I didn't have social media, and so I know it's a very challenging thing, but to not even address really mental health, I don't recall mental health coming up at all in the show. That's something that is bothersome to me.
And Dr. Doreen Marshall over at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, did you see the series?
I have seen it, yes.
And what did they get right or wrong?
Well, I think the show got a lot of things right in terms of portraying issues that teens experience. But like the previous expert said, they missed the mental health piece. And I think, you know, teenagers understand the language of depression and understand talking about mental health concerns. And when you have a series that doesn't portray any of that or the help-seeking piece of that, you know, it kind of leaves them with a different idea about what might be causing suicide. You know, we know the vast majority of people who end their life have had an either undiagnosed or untreated or undertreated mental health concern. And so by leaving that out, the series kind of missed an important opportunity to help people understand suicide.
Right. So what would you want them to include in a show that they left out? How would they do that?
Well, one thing I think is, you know, showing teens seeking help in a way that has a positive outcome could have been, a good opportunity to show that not only is that possible, but that's much more likely if a teen does seek help, and maybe showing different ways of seeking help. You know, teens often do not go to adults. But often we hear from their friends that they're concerned about one another or they're concerned about someone else at their school. So if they had showed some of that, it may have been a really good opportunity to help people understand that. Not only is help available, but like your previous expert said, seeking it early and actively is actually the best way to address these kinds of concerns.
A lot of criticism has been leveled at the show because they use suicide as this way of as revenge. That Hannah Baker, who all these things happened to her, and she evens the score by killing herself and leaving these tapes, and everyone is now going through all this drama because of her demise. And that doesn't seem actually very realistic in and of itself, but it is a fantasy that maybe someone who is in trouble may latch onto. And so should we be talking about what really happens when there is a teen suicide in our community and how it does not go like it's portrayed in this program, Dr. Marshall?
Absolutely. And what I would add is that, you know, we know suicide is very complex and it has multiple causes that we're just starting to understand the science around. The show defaults to interpersonal relationships as a main and maybe the only cause of suicide. And while we know that's not the case, we know suicide is connected to biological, historical facts, meaning things that have happened in a person's life long before the death occurs. you know, environment plays a piece, maybe, but we don't even fully understand that role. So by showing kind of the single cause, you know, it's the relationships with the friends that go badly, it does a disservice to really understanding suicide, which is much more complex. The other thing I would add is I think, you know, in the teen years, teenagers have this sense of the importance of relationships. And, you know, the showing Hannah, the main character, as kind of exacting revenge on those relationships, it's probably a fantasy that many teens have had, you know, that, you know, they'll think different of me when. And I think for someone who's struggling, it does play into that myth or that kind of dream belief that I'll show them, which I think, you know, we know teenagers have, you know, they emphasize relationships as very important. So it kind of, I think, also presents a bit of a skewed idea of what actually happens after a suicide. You know, there's not this sense of people feeling like revenge has been exacted. It's actually a much different experience for those that have been left behind.
Latika Gibson at Northside Northeast ISD, what are y'all saying? Y'all put out this letter, and it's been called a warning, but is it really a warning? Because nowadays, we really can't prevent kids from watching things or being exposed to things, or is it more of a heads up to parents so that they would be aware of what's happening and try to at least have some dialogue?
Absolutely. That was our intent. It was to just let parents know that if you're not aware that that this is a series that's out there, we want you to be aware and to have resources for how to have the conversations, because while we're available as educators to have those conversations, we know that the best conversations about something that's so sensitive is with parents. And sometimes parents may feel uncomfortable with having the conversation, but if they have the resources at their fingertips, they will be completely ready to do that. They just don't know. Like, we don't all have that extensive training. And I loved what Dr. Gentry said about his conversation with his son. That's a wonderful model for other parents, and I hope that parents that are listening can use that model as well.
Is the book in the libraries if we're at Northeast ISD?
You know, I can't answer that. I would assume they probably are, but I can't. I don't have that information at my fingertips.
The show is rated MATV for mature audiences, but yet this is clearly targeting teenagers in its content and marketing. Do you think that there is some that shows that there is some hypocrisy here in how this is being packaged, Otika?
That's a really great question. You know, my understanding is that whenever the series was first released, it was released and there wasn't even a warning. And now I believe that there's a warning that maybe I'm not sure if it's at the beginning of every episode or if it's just at the beginning of some of the episodes that say that this is graphic and may not be appropriate for all audiences. But because of these kinds of platforms, you know, whenever it's a streaming subscription service, it's so readily available. And that's another thing that makes being a teenager so hard. There's so much media at our fingertips now. And if you're a struggling teenager who's vulnerable to some of these issues, that's a concern for us. We want to make sure that those kids know that there's help available.
Right, and we know that they can reach out and that the professionals that they come in contact with are not going to be the professionals who are portrayed in this Netflix series. We're going to continue the conversation. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Okita Gibson from the Northeast Independent School District, Senior Director of Leadership Development. The source continues after this, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Suicide is the second leading cause of death in adolescents between the ages of 15 and 19. What's the best way to address this sensitive topic and promote healthy coping mechanisms? There's a program on Netflix now that is very popular with the teen set, 13 Reasons Why. Some have raised warnings that the program glamorizes suicide and actually will inhibit children from who are feeling the pressures for suicide to reach out and get professional help. We invite you into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Lauren has been hanging on for a long time. And Lauren, I appreciate your patience, and you're on the air.
Hi. Hey. So I had two thoughts about it. One is what adults could take from that show, and then the other was I watched it with my sister and kind of her response to it versus mine. And I really liked what Dr. Marshall was talking about when you're watching the show and you get to the end, the mental health aspect is missing. And as someone who has had a history of depression, that was something that I really noticed whenever I was watching it, is that you see the show portrays her suicide as like revenge and doesn't quite get to the hopelessness that Hannah may be feeling. And you also are, by the end, you're kind of like, okay, was this show more about sexual assault or was it more about suicide? Because as you get deeper into it, the rape and the slut shaming is a more prominent theme than her actual suicide. So those were just some things that I noticed about it. But something that I thought that they did well was the students' autonomy and getting the students in the show their own characters. I think that they portrayed how high school kids view themselves and view their life pretty well. And something that we can take from that is the role of adults in that. A lot of the time you're watching the show and you're like, where are the adults? Obviously her parents really cared about her, but there were times where it was like, you know, where I could recognize, okay, this would be a good point for mom and dad to step in, or having more parental involvement or supervision in the children's life, but also for educational staff, whether it's teachers or administrators, I think that it's important for them to watch it to see maybe how some students view their role. I know whenever I was in high school, not many people were willing to go talk to a counselor about a personal issue. We viewed the counselors mostly as the person who does our scheduling and who helps us with our college applications, and didn't see them as a mental health resource. And I think that the way that the show portrays the counselor and the principal and some of the other staff at the school is unfortunately very accurate, that a lot of them do not have the skill set to be able to talk about mental health and depression, because they are pretty stigmatized topics. My mom works in school administration, and most of the training that they get is kind of how do we deal with it after the fact, and, you know, don't do large memorials and, you know, overly talk about it at school because you don't want to contribute to romanticizing it and leading to copycats.
So Lauren, what was the ages between you and your sister, and what was her reaction to the show?
My sister is 23, and I'm 25.
Okay, and so we're close in age.
Too far from the high school years, but yeah, far enough that we can put it into perspective.
Okay. All right, Lauren, thank you for your call. You had some great ideas there. Thank you for contributing. Thank you. And so, Dr. Gentry, let me ask you about something that she brought up, Lauren brought up. this sort of Truman Show-esque, this spotlight that kids think is following them throughout their day. And so they feel this adolescent brain is perceiving the world and processing events differently than adults. And typically adults, we have forgotten what it was like to be that age.
Yeah, there's a developmental psychologist I can't think of at the moment who had the concept of imaginary audience, that there's a time in the lives of adolescents when they feel like they're before an audience and social matters are intensified. And then there's also a lot of evidence in adolescent brain development literature that adolescents experience things more intensely than adults do. So their highs are higher, their lows are lower. And one of the things a caller touched on I think is really important and is hopelessness. And suicide's usually a sign of hopelessness. And when we interview a kid clinically, particularly if there's a history of suicide attempt, recent or further back, we ask them, did you want to die? Because that's an important question. And a lot of times kids will say no, even though they attempted suicide, when you ask them that question. And what that usually leads to is the intention was to stop the pain. So I think that's an important thing to understand about suicide and what motivates it.
And if we can direct these people into understanding that there are other ways of dealing with the pain other than self-destruction.
Right. Yes, I think that's super important. And I haven't seen the program. I got a sense of it from watching that program I was telling you about earlier that you all have. And like the caller said, I had the feeling that the pain and the hopelessness was maybe not portrayed as realistically as it could have been or should have been.
Dr. Doreen Marshall over at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Lauren talked about how school counselors are not really equipped to deal with this issue. They're more programmed to deal with the aftermath. Is that true?
I think that may be true in some cases, although I think more recently in the last few years we've seen a real move nationally for teachers to get more training in the area of suicide prevention specifically and mental health concerns as well. So at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, we do have programs that are teacher training programs that can help teachers kind of raise their awareness about suicide and how it might manifest in students. We have a program called More Than Sad that talks about how, you know, what depression looks like versus just usual sadness or what we think of as usual sadness in adolescence. So I think there's been a movement for schools to kind of raise their awareness and also look at their policies around responding to students in distress, which is very hopeful. I think it's probably better now than it's ever been, but we still have a ways to go in terms of getting a school counselors, teachers, and all people who interact with students in a school to raise their awareness about suicide prevention.
And Terry Mabrito from the Alamo Area Teen Suicide Prevention Coalition, if a teen talks about suicide or they attempt suicide, how likely are they to try it again?
Oh, gosh. I think Jeff may have some more information about that. I don't really have a data piece in regards to that.
It's a key risk factor.
It is definitely a higher risk if they have attempted. The first attempt certainly increases future risk.
Yeah. Okay. And so what should the wraparound be for that child?
Well, I mean, I think some of the things that we were just talking with our expert from AFSP about training and so forth. And so part of what we try to do in our coalition is to provide meetings, opportunities to, talk with one another regularly, provide additional training so that we can all, and not just for a specific target audience like a teacher or a counselor at a school, but bringing everybody together, different kinds of stakeholders together to learn together about mental health in general and teen suicide prevention. We're certainly doing that more and more locally. The opportunities for training, it's for teachers and other school staff, is certainly increasing locally because of our coalition and bringing together folks to talk about it on a regular basis.
So do you think the teens are dealing with a high level of stress?
Yeah, the teens on our teen advisory board, clearly every month they are talking to me about how the stress level that they feel. They talk to me about things like, you know, that when they talk about their stress or they do have that higher intensity of reaction to things, that there's the general kind of response from adults is, you know, hey, get over it. You know, it's a, sort of that tough love approach. And they really feel that that does not work, you know. And I guess, you know, from their perspective, again, it's their perspective. It's how they're feeling. They often don't feel like they're being listened to. They're not taken seriously. And with suicide, you've got to take any of those sort of symptoms and outcries and warning signs. You've got to take them seriously. It may be that heightened, intense emotion that's normal in adolescence, but it could also be an underlying mental health problem, a crisis, depression that hasn't been, hasn't been recognized yet.
Okay, we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back. We're going to talk more about teen suicide here in the area and nationally. This continues to be a leading cause of death in adolescents. What's the best way to deal with this sensitive topic? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm the chair of the local South Texas chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I began with the AFSP because I have a personal lived experience, struggle with suicide and an attempt in my teens, but also am a suicide loss survivor of many friends' suicide. So I can relate to the struggle with depression, anxiety, and feelings of hopelessness. So my goal in serving the San Antonio community as well as the South Texas community with AFSP programming is to offer hope to those that are struggling themselves, to let them know that there is hope, and to continue to seek and connect with treatment that does work for mental illness, and also to provide hope to those suicide loss survivors through AFSP programs. I believe in hope. I know there is hope, and I want to be a messenger of that hope because I was able to find hope.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies talking about teen suicide here in San Antonio, also talking about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why, which depicts the aftermath of a girl's suicide and the events that led to that fatal decision. Let's go to the phone lines with Rosie. And Rosie, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. I was calling because I just wanted to let you know that I have a son. He's 18 years old, and he was hospitalized 5 times for suicidal ideation. And it started like 3 years ago, but now he's doing better. But it was really tough. We had a lot of nights where we didn't sleep at night, my husband and I, because we had to stay up for suicide watch. And and also he was cutting himself. He was anorexic. He was bulimic. He was hospitalized 5 times for suicide ideation. And it was really very, very difficult. The school put a lot of pressure on him, the school he was attending. And we moved him to a different school, and still it wasn't working. He had too much anxiety, and he finally went to counselors. I admire all the work that they do, but school counselors don't have enough time for the kids. It was a matter of life and death for us to go talk to them, but you know, they're really overworked. They have like at most 15 minutes to tell you, these are some resources, but they don't really have time to sit and listen to you. That's what we found. And I was, we were desperately looking for help, and uh, I, we were able to find help with at Clarity Hospital, and they recommended a good therapist. But, you know, finding a good child psychiatrist and a good therapist and medication is really hard, and we were, you know, really diligent. But I can't imagine other parents who don't have access to all of that. And my son did have a friend who did commit suicide, and he left a note on Instagram saying goodbye, and that it's still up right now. A lot of people were very upset. I don't think it glorified it, but, you know, people were just confused. The kids were confused. But there is a lot of kids out there right now who, once my son got on medication, suddenly a flood of people came to us and told us all about what, you know, they were on medication. And I was really surprised at how big of a problem it is. It's huge, and I'm glad that you're doing this show, because this really needs to bring we need to bring attention to this.
Rosie, thank you for your call. I sure do appreciate you telling us that story, and I hope everything is so much better for you and your son. Dr. Gentry, medication, is that something that really can make a big difference?
Well, you know, it can. I didn't come into this field as a big advocate of medication, but I've seen it help. It doesn't always help, but I've seen it help. And you know, depression and anxiety are things that we know how to treat, and we can make progress when we have the opportunity to do that. So there is hope. And like I said before, so many people I've heard them say, I wish we had done this much sooner, because they find that they get improvement, you know.
All right, another caller. Dr. Ruth is on the line. Dr. Ruth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call, David, and thank you to all the experts, especially to Dr. Gentry over at Child Clarity. Great organization, does great work. I'm a psychologist who works with a lot of teens and families in the area. So two things I wanted to point out. One is that the expert earlier who said that very heavy topics like this should be discussed with teens by their parents, which I completely agree with. And yet, if we know that one in five minds are affected by mental health illnesses, we also know, for kids, we also know that parents suffer, obviously, from behavioral or mental health issues. So a lot of the parents are walking around with their own issues. They might not be able to be emotionally available or get triggers themselves about their own issues. They might not be available to talk to their teen about it. So even though the resources are sent out, which I think is lovely and very important, we also have to remember that all of us, as a village, if you will, to use a cliche, we all need to be available to those kids, to be that adult that they can trust. So I, as a mom, can be there for my kids, for the friends of my kids, a trusted teacher, a coach, a principal, a church member, somebody that they can talk to so that then they can get the resources. We need to be really remember that parents also are afflicted by mental health issues and are not always able to be there for their kids. The second issue that I just wanted to point out is that, as your experts know as well, LGBTQ kids are so much more prone to suicidal ideation under behavior. That's something that needs to be brought into the conversation about being able to not shame kids when they tell us that they're gay and or LGBT. It's so important to be open and available, because those kids even are at higher risk for suicide, for depression, for anxiety, for all types of problems. And I'll take comments off the air, but thank you so much.
All right, thanks for calling in, Dr. Ruth. So Dr. Doreen Marshall, the role of parents, but parents dealing with their own emotional mental health issues simultaneously. So some parents may not be equipped or be emotionally available to a teen that is reaching out.
Yeah, I agree with what the caller said, in that it really takes just one trusted adult to reach out and to say, I know. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a parent. It could be a coach, be a teacher, it could be a neighbor. It can be someone else if it's not the parent. But I think that what she said about kind of all of us being gatekeepers for our young people and looking out for them is a really important point. I did also want to comment, you know, this idea of parents having their own mental health struggles. I think one of the most important things we can do as adults is model help seeking. So if we're wanting our children to get help for a mental health concern, but we're not willing to seek help ourselves, that certainly sends a message. So, you know, I think it's just so important that the adults who are struggling also take care of themselves and seek help for themselves as a way of also modeling for our young people how it's done and that it works.
All right. So, Dr. Gentry, you have resources that you want to share that people should be aware of?
Just a couple of things. One is online, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry has a tab that's called Facts for Families, and these are little condensed units that describe everything from different kinds of disorders to suicide risk and things like that. There's also a researcher named Lawrence Steinberg who has written some books. One's called You and Your Adolescent that are basically like textbooks for parents and how to understand things like family communication and problem solving, peer group, emotional development and things like that. And then one other I would mention is the Campaign to Change Direction. You can just Google Change Direction. And what I like about this site is it gives you a very simple way, things to look for, signs of problems with mental illness. And it's five things to look for, and it's very simple. It's a great resource.
And Terry Mabrito over at the Alamo Area Teen Suicide Prevention Coalition, in trying to give context to this Netflix program, 13 Reasons Why for Teens, and should we just stress the fact that this is not a documentary. This is something that they ginned up in order to get eyeballs onto the Netflix. And it may resonate with some kids on some levels, but this really is not a depiction of real life.
Absolutely agree with that statement. And, you know, our kids on our teen advisory board are saying that exact thing. So teens, there are teens out there that are getting that. They're understanding that this is not, you know, this is not real life. This is a TV show. And so we want them to talk about that. We want them to understand that. And, you know, we want conversations to start way so much earlier regarding, you know, parents can talk to their kids about just stress. Start with the word stress, and then we can talk more about mental health. And then we can also talk about, you know, understanding the risk for teen suicide.
And can I give a really simple
tip
for talking to kids is to ask them, you want to know what I did today as opposed to what'd you do today? You know, it's just, it's a small thing.
That's a great tip.
And start the conversation. And
this is my day. This is what I did.
All right. And share that. And also remind them that high school doesn't go on forever. It does get better. I want to thank all of our guests, Dr. Doreen Marshall, the Vice President of Programs for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Terry Mabrito. She is the coordinator for the Alamo Area Teen Suicide Prevention Coalition, and Dr. Jeff Gentry. He's the Senior Vice President of Clinical Services for the Clarity Child Guidance Center. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Kim Johnson, Jan Ross Piedad, and David Martin Davies. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler, and production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.